Radio Prague News.
The European Parliament has approved a resolution calling on the Commission to suspend all EU subsidies to the conglomerate founded by the Czech Prime Minister. The Lower House is debating a proposal to tax church restitutions, and a poll just out suggests the army and police are currently the most trusted institutions in the country. The European Parliament has approved a resolution calling on the European Commission to suspend all EU subsidies to companies belonging to the Agrofert conglomerate founded by Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš until the question of whether he de facto retains control over it is settled. The debate in the European Parliament focused on whether Babiš, who as Prime Minister can influence the dispersal of both Czech and EU subsidies, has a conflict of interest despite having placed Agrofert in trust funds. The call for the suspension of EU subsidies to companies belonging to the Agrofert conglomerate does not concern any other businesses in the country, Minister for Regional Development Klára Dostálová said at a press briefing in Prague on Thursday. The Ministry for Regional Development coordinates the distribution of EU funds. The leader of the coalition Social Democratic Party, Jan Hamáček, said the government would debate the situation around Agrofert at its next session. Meanwhile, the European Commission has announced it will send a team of auditors to the Czech Republic to look into the distribution of EU subsidies from 2007 until the present day. The Lower House of Parliament is debating a proposal to tax church restitutions in a special session. The bill was put forward by the Communist Party and has support from the coalition ANO and the Social Democrats, as well as the opposition Freedom and Direct Democracy Party. Taxing money returned to churches, predominantly the Catholic Church, in return for property confiscated by the Communists, is a highly sensitive issue. Right-wing opposition parties are vehemently against the idea, arguing that stolen property should be returned without financial strings attached. Taxing church restitutions was one of the conditions laid down by the Communist Party in return for supporting the minority government. The army and police enjoy a high level of public trust, according to a poll conducted by the CVVM agency. Both received a 67% trust rating. The judiciary got a 58% trust rating. Trust in NGOs and the media is significantly lower, with only 48% of Czechs saying they trust information broadcast on the radio. The press received a 38% trust rating, while television 40%. Only 37% of Czechs trust NGOs, which the polling agency says may be linked to the migrant crisis. The country's churches are bottom of the ladder with a 25% trust rating. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Friday should be partly cloudy to overcast with snow showers and day temperatures between 0 and -4 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. Coming up in today's programme, the European Parliament has passed a resolution regarding a possible conflict of interests involving the Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš. Czech football team Viktoria Plzeň manages to scrape into third place of the Champions League, meaning it will play in the spring phase of the Europa League. And later, Vít Pohanka will ask popular writer and journalist Pavel Kosatík about his views on the past Czech century. All that coming up, so please stay with us. The European Parliament has passed a resolution regarding a possible conflict of interests involving the Czech Prime Minister. Under the decision, the European Commission will suspend subsidies to the Agrofert conglomerate linked to Andrej Babiš until the situation surrounding his alleged conflict of interest is settled. Ruth Frankova reports.
434 MEPs voted on Thursday to pass the resolution on conflicts of interest and the protection of the EU budget in the Czech Republic, submitted by the European Greens with the support of the European People's Party, with 64 voting against and 47 abstaining. The process was set in motion earlier this year by the Prague branch of Transparency International, which says Mr. Babiš continues to benefit from Agrofert despite having placed it in trust funds. This was supported by a leaked European Commission legal opinion. During a debate in the European Parliament on Wednesday, EU Budget Commissioner Günther Oettinger said the Commission was not going to pay subsidies to the companies linked to the Czech Prime Minister until the situation was resolved.
We have made it clear from our point of view that the legal situation hasn't been satisfactorily reflected. Moreover, any potential conflict of interest has not been eliminated, although we were not able to ascertain any attempt to use money illegally.
According to Karl Dolan, director of Transparency International EU, the resolution makes it very clear that Mr. Babiš has to respond to the concerns of the Parliament and the Commission.
If you remember, this debate has come about in part because of a text of a legal opinion which confirms that there does exist a state of conflicts of interest between Mr. Babiš's economic interests in the Agrofert group and his position as prime minister. So there is that legal opinion. And as well, we have the political opinion of the European Parliament that this is something that needs to be enforced as soon as possible. So I think the next thing for Mr. Babiš to do is to clarify how he will resolve the situation.
Mr. Babiš has always presented himself as a pro-European politician. Do you think that this affair might actually change his attitude towards the EU?
No, I would hope, if anything, it would make him even more pro-EU, because the European Union is first and foremost a community of values. What we are seeing now is that the European Commission and the European Parliament are playing their role in providing checks and balances within the system. So I would say this is the perfect example of how the European Union should work. It shows that nobody is above the law, whether you're a prime minister or a citizen or whoever. And that's exactly what we value in the European Union.
An audit of the EU funds received by Agrofert is due to take place in January and February. Meanwhile, Mr. Babiš, who continues to deny any wrongdoing, has assured MEPs he would continue to cooperate with the European Commission legal service.
And that was Ruth Frankova with that report. Viktoria Plzeň can look forward to more European football in the new year after securing third spot in their Champions League group to earn a place in the Europa League. It is the fifth time coach Pavel Vrba has steered Plzeň to the spring phase of Europe's second-tier competition, an impressive feat for a club of the West Bohemian stature. Ian Willoughby has more.
The Champions League anthem has become very familiar to fans of Viktoria Plzeň, with the club making the group stages three times in the last seven seasons. This time out, their opponents were holders Real Madrid, semi-finalists Roma and CSKA Moscow. As the top two go through, Plzeň were realistically in a battle for third, which comes with a place in the round of 32 of the second-tier Europa League. On the final match day on Wednesday, the West Bohemians needed to at least equal CSKA's result at Real. Incredibly, the Russians were 2-0 up at half-time. Plzeň, meanwhile, were drawing 0-0 with Roma, so stood to come last, but eventually won 2-1 to seal third spot. Roman Hubník is a Plzeň defender.
I didn't expect that Real could lose at home. The score was 3-0 in the end, which surprised me a lot. We were kind of healthily annoyed at half-time. We knew we needed to go for it, and I think we played more attacking football after the break. We were more determined to score, and I think the second half was great from our perspective.
Journalist Karel Hering ascribes a lot of credit for Plzeň's success to manager Pavel Vrba.
I think it's something extraordinary in Czech football. He has taken Viktoria Plzeň for the fifth time to do Europa League round 32. So it's something unusual here in this country. So for me, it's really, really something special.
For very big clubs in very big European leagues who are trying to win their own leagues, getting into the Europa League, coming third in the Champions League group stage, can be seen as something almost negative, that it's a distraction, it's not a top-class competition. But what does it mean for a Czech club?
I think Pavel Vrba was right when he said before the campaign that for Czech clubs, when they are in the Champions League group stage, the main target is finishing third and moving to Europa League, because, you know, they can't compare with teams like Real Madrid, AS Roma, even though they defeated them yesterday. But we know Roma is in crisis. So I rate it as a big success when the Czech team finished third. And, you know, it was for the third time when Victoria finished on the third place in the Champions League group stage.
And that was journalist Karel Herring speaking to Ian Willoughby about Victoria Plzeň's ongoing European football adventure. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it is now time for our main feature of the day. As the end of 2018 draws near, Czechs are reflecting on a century of being an independent state. Years ending in the number 8 have a special meaning for Czechs: 1918, 1938, 1948, and of course 1968 were the major turning points for the country and its people. Vít Pohanka spoke to the famous journalist and writer Pavel Kosatík, who has authored many books, screenplays and documentaries about Czech history.
Pavel Kosatík is meeting his readers, discussing and signing his new book. The title is simple, even bare: The Past and the Present. It is about the history of the monastery and later chateau in Žďár nad Sázavou. The place is probably best known for the 18th century pilgrimage church of St. John of Nepomuk, built by the architect Jan Blažej Santini Eichel, which made it to the UNESCO World Heritage List. But Pavel Kosatík has until now been writing about the history of the whole Czech nation and its most prominent personalities, such as the first president Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk. So why write a book about this particular place in the Bohemian Moravian Highlands?
Přes 800 let se tady udržuje tradice.
For over 800 years, a tradition has been kept up here. There are a few other places like that elsewhere in the Czech Republic, but here that tradition has been kept up with the help of some really strong personalities. Some of them were creative, like Jan Blažej Santini Eichel. Others were, let us say, political, in the sense that they had the power to make things move. Take Abbot Václav Vejmluva, who brought Santini here in the 18th century. The people with power, in the good sense, met the creatives here. Despite the wars, catastrophes and terror that came throughout centuries, a lot has survived to this day, including the spirit of this place. Even after centuries, we can still imagine what they meant, and that is vital in history. You do not just deduce hypothetical interpretations from some stones, but you can actually hope, with a certain amount of risk, that you get into the heads and hearts of these people who lived centuries ago.
For Pavel Kosatík, Žďár is a sort of miniature reflection of the uninterrupted story of the whole Czech nation, which can help us better understand the thinking and motivation of our ancestors. That's something to which this history writer devoted his professional life. After decades of tackling these issues, he obviously still finds them fascinating.
Češi jsou jedním z těch menších evropských národů, které měly jednak štěstí a jednak vitalitu.
Czechs are one of the smaller European nations who have had good luck and vitality. This combination enabled them to survive the pressure of other large nations. They have managed to preserve their identity, even though right now they are a bit unhappy with the quality of their democracy and slow development of national institutions. I believe the key thing is that Czech society has demonstrated an unbelievable will to survive. And it was not easy in this high-risk geographical location. Central Europe has always been under enormous pressures from Germany, its language and culture, on the one hand, and Russian influence and imperialism on the other. This combination of forces has never been good. Right now, it looks like everything is stable, but that may not last forever. That is why I write about the past, but always take a keen interest in the future.
The past century has definitely been full of both tragic and joyful turning points for people in the three historical lands that form today's Czech Republic: Bohemia, Moravia and Silesia. The year 1918 brought independence, 1938 crisis over Sudetenland and loss of independence to Nazi Germany. 10 years later, the communist coup d'etat meant decades of Soviet dominance. When, in 1968, Czechoslovakia tried to reform socialism, the Soviet Union and its allies crushed this attempt by tanks and troops. Freedom and democracy came finally in 1989. Since then, Czechs joined Western democracies in NATO and European Union. However, for Pavel Kosatík, the struggle to build healthy, self-confident, yet not nationalist democratic institutions is far from finished. He sees everything in a broader historical context.
Já si myslím, že hlavní letopočet český 20. století je rok 38, protože...
I think the year 1938 was the main turning point for the Czech nation in the 20th century. That was the moment that changed the centuries-old trend. Ever since the Battle of Bílá Hora in 1620, when the German-speaking Austrian Habsburg dynasty reaffirmed and strengthened its dominance over the Czech lands, Czechs were continuously on the way up as a nation, step by step, first by preserving the language and literature in the countryside, the cottages. Later on, the Czech language started penetrating the world of industry and business. But what was most important, Czechs built up their own political organizations from scratch and acquired confidence. After the First World War, they founded their own state, which prospered, and they thought that this would go on and things would only get better.
A místo toho přišla ta rána do vazu v tom roce 38, která pro mnohé z nich navíc ještě byla naprosto nečekaná.
Instead, they were stabbed in the back in 1938, quite unexpectedly in the eyes of many. Their development suddenly stopped, and I believe that many Czechs are still kind of blocked, and echoes of that national trauma can still be traced. I personally do not know whether we can achieve complete catharsis. I try to do my bit by writing books. I believe in reflection. But if you describe a trauma or a problem, you start the process of healing. It is like going through therapy. First, you have to describe what is wrong with you. That is the first step on the road to recovery. It is good to talk about traumas. The worst thing you can do is to be silent about them, keep them under wraps. So I would be glad if we did not sweep these national traumas under the carpet. We cannot just keep saying how proud we are and secretly carry on with this fear that we have had in our hearts for several generations.
Czechs, unlike their neighbors in Poland, Slovakia or Hungary, often don't seem to take themselves and their national identity quite seriously. For Pavel Kosatík, this tendency has deep historical roots.
Naše společnost, na rozdíl od té polské, kterou jste zmínil, a od většiny dalších, nikdy nebo dlouho...
Our society did not have a firm structure, unlike the one in Poland that you mentioned, and most others. It took a long time after the Battle of Bílá Hora to develop the sense that every person would know what is expected of him or her. People have different roles, but they know about the others and know that they need each other. The intellectuals know that they need workers. Workers know they need intellectuals, to put it simply. This is the only way in which so-called elites can work in a society if they trust others and are trusted in turn. Everybody realizes that the structure is needed for the life of a society. I do not like to say this, but I think we Czechs resemble rather something like an amorphous crowd. We want to make sure that no one can think of himself or herself better than others, that no one is too different. In the end, we all pay for this by not allowing the elites to lead. As Masaryk said, we end up like those proverbial frogs in a pond, croaking at each other.
At least since 1989, the Czechs have had the freedom to define their own future, make their own choices. But in Pavel Kosatík's view, the 1990s were a time of many missed opportunities.
Pro mě je tam klíčový fakt ne moment, ale tendence. To, co my jsme neviděli. My jsme...
For me, there is not one key moment of this decade, but our common tendency to underestimate the problems ahead. Francis Fukuyama wrote the book The End of History and The Last Man. In the general euphoria after the fall of communism, he argued that the liberal democracy and free trade are on their way to final victory all over the world. That simply did not happen. This was an especially great pity in the case of us Czechs. We had a very long, intimate and bitter experience with the Russians. At first, we started making fun of them, laughed at President Yeltsin dancing drunk in front of the television cameras. We thought they were on their knees, and we did not understand that their experience was much more complex. Even though they withdrew their army, they were still present in this country. Their intelligence services stayed here and worked very hard, as we know today. And now we are reaping what we sowed.
Pro mě 90. leta jsou obdobím, kdy jsme mnoho věcí podcenili.
For me, the 1990s was a period when we underestimated a lot of things. Our elites, and I use this word in a positive sense, were naive. No doubt that the 90s were the best decade in the life of my generation, definitely for me at least, but I and my generation should also repent. We did not see what was really going on under our noses. We missed the most important developments.
The century of Czech independence might have been interrupted by war and totalitarianism. But historian Pavel Kosatík doesn't worry as much about the return of some sort of authoritarian regime or downright military and security threats. It is the environment that burdens his thoughts.
Poslední dobou hodně přemýšlím o tom, jestli ta historiografie, ke který mám vztah a mám důvod, proč to dělám.
Lately, I have been having some doubts about whether historiography is really the discipline that a man should devote his energy and time to. If it really becomes evident that climate change is irreversible, then we all have a great civilization problem. Politics and history as we know them may become outdated. The way we lead our public discourse cannot bring any change. That is why we need some degree of national hierarchy so that different groups and layers of our society communicate, recognize this hierarchy. Those ignorant, mischievous people who only create chaos and animosity on internet discussions should know their place. We need to kind of close our ranks into a form of national and state unity and join other nations in order to solve this problem, which is most likely ahead of us. It cannot be done by individuals and even individual nations. We have to act together if we want to survive.
These are warning words of writer Pavel Kosatík. Perhaps the best hope for the future lies in the fact that he can voice them freely. He can be critical of present government without fear of repression. No doubt Czechs, as other nations in Central Europe, have a lot to worry about. But they also have the freedom of choice that they so often lacked in the past 100 years. Vít Pohanka, Radio Prague.
And that was Vít Pohanka speaking to Pavel Kosatík in reflection on the past century of Czech statehood and its influences on us today. If you have any comments about today's program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Tom McEncrow. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.